proceed, then I'd ask the clerk to call the case, please.
The court will now call Roger Lieberman, Aaron Lieberman versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Matthew Kidda will argue for the appellant. Ms. Laura Tomlin will argue for the state.
Counsel.
Good afternoon, counsel, your honors.
Afternoon, and welcome.
Thank you. Your honor, this appeal, essentially arise out of what is a very unfortunate
Mr. Kitten, excuse me a moment. We had a case before you, and I failed to introduce to all the people, both to you, counsel, and the people who are here in court, the panel that's here today. And I'd like to say that to my right is Justice Alfano, and to my left is Justice Gardner, and I'm Justice Meyer, and I'm your presiding judge this afternoon. And I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Matthew Kidda for the Lieberman family.
Go ahead, sir.
This case essentially arises out of a very unfortunate and nasty family business dispute. And the complaining witness is the daughter of Roger Lieberman and the sister of Aaron. Ms. Payne at the time, apparently unsatisfied with the $15,000 judgment that she received in civil court, was able to convince the Denton County District Attorney's Office to prosecute my clients for allegedly filing fraudulent lien papers with the Denton County Clerk. Now, notwithstanding the fact that there is a specific section of the Texas Penal Code, section 32.49, that specifically addresses the criminalization of the failure to release a fraudulent lien, the state opted to prosecute my clients under a different section, section 32.46, which includes the general language criminalizing causing someone else to sign or execute any document affecting property, services, or pecuniary interests. Our position in this case, Your Honor, is that the state should have prosecuted them under the 32.49, a statute that is a misdemeanor, for which the district court had no jurisdiction. Moreover, they failed to even to prove all of the elements that would be necessary to prevail under 32.46. And I think this is important here, is conspicuously absent from both my brief and the state's briefs are any cases from anywhere in Texas in which a district attorney's office has prosecuted someone for refusing to release lien documents that were allegedly fraudulent under 32.46.
Say, refusing to release the lien documents?
Well, for refusing to release them or for filing them in the first place.
I thought the problem was filing them in the first place, not refusing to release them.
Correct, Your Honor. The 32.49 criminalizes refusing to release them. There are no cases, and I think this is what I was trying to get at, in which someone has been prosecuted and an appellate court has written on it, in which someone has where someone has been convicted of filing fraudulent lien documents under 32.46. And I asked for oral argument in this case because of the lack of any precedent on it, and because it is inherently a policy question as to how this statute should be interpreted and the type of penalty that the legislature intended to impose on individuals who engaged in this activity. Now, obviously our two most important sources for what the legislature meant was to look at the plain text of the statute and then also to look at its legislative intent as expressed in the bill analyses. When you look at the plain language of the statute, it states specifically that the state, in order to prevail, has to show that the district clerk of Denton County signed or executed a document. And it's our position in this case that she did neither. First of all, with respect to signing it, there was absolutely no testimony at trial from the district clerk that she ever signed anything. The one document that appears to bear a stamped version of her signature, she even stated at trial that is a miscellaneous fee document. So there's no allegation from the state that the cover sheet that was attached to their exhibit was somehow the document that affected the property. So this case essentially turns on the issue of, did the district clerk execute a lien? And our position is no. A lien is not a tangible document. The state takes the position in this case that once she filed it, the lien suddenly became effective and put it into its final form. But for 150 years, the Texas Constitution has provided that a lien is a self-executing cause of action. Telling someone to show me your lien would be the equivalent of someone saying, show me your tort. It doesn't exist. A lien is something that you assert. It might be a breach of contract claim, it might be a fraud claim, But a lien is a sort of an intangible claim of right to the proceeds of the sale of property. When the district clerk takes a document and files it in the property records, that does not make the lien effective. You can have an oral lien under Texas law, and there's certainly no way the district clerk can stamp that or sign it or execute. What happens is someone files a document in the district clerk's office to give constructive notice to potential third-party purchasers. And that, under the statute and under the rules, there would be no way for the person holding the mechanics lien, for example, to recover from anyone other than the property owner with whom they made the contract if that document is not filed or if there is no constructive notice. Ostensibly, somebody holding a mechanics lien could erect a giant billboard across the street from the property where they had the lien saying, I have a lien on this property. That could serve as constructive notice. Most mechanics don't do that. Instead, they file documents at the clerk's office. But the point being is that the district clerk did not execute this document. There is not one case anywhere in Texas searchable reports where the verb to execute is ever associated with the activities of a district clerk with respect to filing documents. And the testimony at trial from the district clerk herself, she specifically said that what she did is she filed and recorded documents. She filed and recorded them so that way others could come look up the property records and see what is associated. At one point in time, the prosecuting attorney said, did you execute this? And she said yes. But that's irrelevant to this court's analysis of what actually to execute means. And this is very important because when you look at the language of the statute, there are two ways that somebody can be found liable under 32.46. Section 1 of the statute is the version that the state opted for, and that is causing another to sign or execute a document. But Section 2, which the state obviously did not choose to do for reasons I'll get to, addresses causing or inducing a public servant to file or record any purported judgment or document. So if the legislature knew how to talk about a public servant who files and records documents for purposes of establishing liability under 32.46A2, they certainly could have done so if it wanted to criminalize with a felony the filing of a fraudulent lien. When we look to the legislative history, it's clear what number 32A1 was intended to, the result it was intended to achieve. And that is at the time, which I believe was in the mid-1990s, there apparently was an influx of filings and wrongful executions on properties from people pretending to hold judgment liens from Republic of Texas type courts. So the legislature decided to pass this statute to prevent people from doing two different things. One, causing a public servant to file or record purported judgment or other liens from false courts. Well, the reason the state did not choose to prosecute under 32A2 was because the document that Roger and Aaron filed in this case does not pretend to be from a phony court. The document that they filed is a document that said claim of lien. So because they had no cause of action or no right to indict under 32A2, they opted for the very, very general language of 32A1 rather than the specific statute in 3249. So if the clerk did not sign and the clerk did not execute, as a matter of law, the conviction is legally insufficient, or the evidence is legally insufficient to support the conviction. The only way that the state can prevail, or that this court can affirm, is if it can look at the verbs sign and execute, conclude that the court did that, and then conclude that somehow, even though that uses very, very general language and doesn't specifically address filing liens, that this statute can be read in pari materia with 32.49, which addresses specific conduct. Now, I've briefed both of those issues, and I think it was certainly our position that this court doesn't even need to address the 32.49 issue. If this court concludes that she neither signed nor executed, the case must be reversed. But if it somehow can suggest or hold that 32.46's language of sign or execute describes the activity that the district clerk did here, we then have to look and see, why would the legislature pass two statutes to cover the same thing? Does that make any sense whatsoever? And the arguments put forth by the state in their brief, simply, I don't believe, are persuasive because it would suggest that every single time, I mean, look at the plain language of 32A1. It could be so broad-based, it could legitimately criminalize every single breach of contract case in which one side claims fraudulent inducement in the contract. That's clearly not what the legislature intended by passing this particular statute. We have a statute that does that. It's called the DTPA. They're making fraudulent statements and inducing someone to enter into a contract. The penalties are already set forth for that. Is the language in 32A1 broad? Yes. But when you read that language in the context of the legislative history, and then look at what the district clerk was actually doing here, she wasn't signing a lien. She wasn't signing a contract with the property owner. She wasn't executing a document. All we can assume, based on the lack of case law interpreting 32.46A1 and the language of the case law and the plain language of the statute, is to think what kind of conduct could conceivably fall underneath it. And when you consider that what the legislature was trying to criminalize is based on its own specific statements, was people using phony court documents to steal another's property. Causing someone to sign or execute could be achieved by, for example, taking a judgment from a phony jurisdiction, attempting to domesticate it in Texas, and doing so by convincing a magistrate or another judge to sign an order saying it should be enforced. By asking a district clerk for a writ of execution, which would then go to a sheriff, who would then go and seize property pursuant to a judgment that didn't exist. Those are the types of things that signing or executing does. Convincing a judge to enter an order where he actually affixes his signature to a document, or someone going and taking your property, that's executing. Taking a document and file stamping it and putting it in a folder is not executing anything. It's not giving rise to a claim. The claim
is just Kidd, I'm reading now the language in the brief of the state that where they're specifically quoting 32.46A1. And I take it that if what your contention would be is that, and I'm following your argument, that under A1, when it says causes another to sign or execute, those are the only two gravamen to be looked at in terms of the charge that was filed,
yes,
as far as your client's concerned. And you're specifically excluding any addition of the words sign, execute, or file, because the action the clerk took here was simply to file in your contention and not to either sign or execute.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. The criminalization of activities requiring a public servant or arising out of a public servant filing and recording documents is addressed in 36A2. The state had no claim against my clients for 36A2 because they did not do any of the things that are enumerated in sub A, B, and C. And that is documents from courts not established under the Constitution, purported judicial entities, or purported judicial officers. None of that applies here, and the state didn't seek an indictment on that ground.
Thank you, sir.
Your Honors, unless you have any additional questions.
I do. Would you read the not the boilerplate, but the pertinent portion of the indictment.
I don't have the indictment right in front of me.
Don't remember it.
I do not recall it from memory.
Okay. Isn't that pretty fundamental to? Yeah. Thank you.
Grand jurors in and for the County of Denton, State of Texas, duly organized, impaneled, and sworn as such, the January term, A.D. 2012. District Court of the 211th Judicial District. Honor about the 22nd day of July 2008, and anterior to the presentment of this indictment in the county and state aforesaid, did then and there, with intent to harm or defraud Kathleen Payne by deception, to wit, misrepresent that Roger Liverman performed construction, remodeling, and landscaping work to property owned by Kathleen Payne, when in fact defendant had not performed such work, cause Cynthia Mistel to sign or execute a document affecting the property or service of Kathleen Payne, being $20,000 or more, but less than $100,000. And that document is of the tenor following. And then following the indictment was the two-page document called Claim of Lien.
Okay.
And so
that's the document there. They alleged that the district clerk signed or executed was the lien?
Yes. They alleged the district clerk signed or executed the two-page Claim of Lien that was immediately following this indictment. And it's our position in this appeal that she did neither, and therefore the evidence was legally insufficient to support the conviction. This court should reverse and render a judgment of not guilty. Thank you, Your Honor.
Kidd, before you quit, I do have one last thing. The record in the case indicates that what the clerk did was simply accept and file. Now, accept and file means putting a document within the public records so that it can be found. In order for that to happen, there has to be some kind of stamp put on the document or something identifying it so that when it's put into indexing, people who are looking for it can find it.
Sure.
And so the clerk's activity here would have been at least to put a number on the filed document, and that would then have been a identifying mechanism for the public in general to find the lien, and if they ever were looking at this piece of property to see if it had any liens filed against it. And how do you address the matter that the clerk's activity was to put a file number on the document in order for it to be properly indexed in the clerk's records?
Your Honor, I think that those tasks are specific to the activities of filing or recording. You know, and think of it in, you know, we're all attorneys here, we've worked in firms or in law offices. You know, you think you have a file clerk who is filing documents, might be marking them with certain indices so that it can be easily located. If your file clerk was filing a contract in the file, you certainly wouldn't suggest she's executing that contract. She's just putting it in a place where it can be found.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your presentation. Counsel.
May it please the court, counsel. In this case, appellants caused another to sign or execute the lien when they presented the fraudulent claim of lien to
execute a lien? How do you execute a lien?
It was the claim of lien. As appellants have argued, the lien would have been executed when there was a contract. Here there was evidence that there was no contract. There was evidence that there was no written contract for sure based on Roger Liverman's testimony in the civil case, but there was also evidence that there was no oral contract. Here, we're not...
You're saying the clerk executed the contract?
The clerk executed the notice.
What you pled, though, executing the notice. You pled executed the lien.
In the indictment, it's Cynthia Mitchell to sign or execute a document affecting property or service of Catherine Payne.
To wit, the lien.
Yes, and it was the document that is the lien. The deputy clerk wasn't executing the actual lien, as in executing the contract. That was done before. What was executed was putting the lien on file for future purchasers of.
What you proved was that the clerk filed the lien.
Yes, and but by
filing. But you pled executed the lien, and I don't know how a clerk would execute a lien.
Well, if you go, it claims to sign or execute the lien, and it was signed because Cynthia Mitchell's stamp was on the first page of State's Exhibit 1 and 2. It was executed because it was brought to It was a legal document brought to its final legal enforceable form. Some of the case law that appellant cited in his reply brief, a case from 2003, I believe it was Butter v. another company, it said that a lien must be filed to give notice. There can be an oral lien. There can be a lien that is not on file, but unless it's filed, it's not giving notice.
Okay, so you're saying that they caused the clerk to give an unwary buyer notice that someone was lurking out there claiming a lien on that property, and somehow that's improper?
Well, they caused the clerk to file this lien, and it was fraudulent.
Okay, file. File is what you're claiming that the clerk was alleged to have been caused to do. File?
Well, file, but we're arguing that by filing it was signing or executing, because first her name was stamped on the front, and it was signed Cynthia Mitchell, as you can see in the State's Exhibits 1 and 2 of the record. And it was executed because it was brought to its final legally enforceable form, because before, when there was no notice, if a buyer would have bought that property and had no notice of that lien, there would have been a problem with enforcing that lien.
Well, I have another question. The indictment says, did then and there with intent to harm or defraud Catherine Payne by deception misrepresented that Aaron had done the work and so forth and caused the clerk to sign an execute a document by deception. What deception was the state alleging that Aaron Liberman used against to induce the clerk to execute it?
Well, there's some testimony when Cynthia Mitchell was on the stand that they, for the most part, they assume that the liens are valid and the things that they file and sign and execute are valid unless on their face they
They don't execute anything. Clerks don't execute anything.
The state's
excuse me.
But I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Can you repeat that question, Justice Gardner?
I forgot the question. Doesn't the clerk I'm going to change it a little bit. Doesn't the clerk have a duty to file anything that's presented to her if the filing fee is paid?
Now I remember. There was testimony that they file documents unless on their face they are obviously fraudulent. And in this case, they filed it. They were brought it and they filed it. And in reality, it was a fraudulent document. So by bringing them that document and saying that this is a valid lien, they were decepting the clerk into thinking that this was a valid lien that needs to be filed.
Okay.
Ms. Tomlin, the usual case, and that was true in this case also, is the document that is handed to the clerk is a lien affidavit, a statement under oath that certain things have occurred in the past, and therefore this document is stating those things that occurred in the past, and it's sworn to, and it's handed to the clerk, and it's been, I think the law establishes that what the clerk is to do is, if it is a sworn document, then the clerk administratively files that document. And in Denton County, I know that whenever you go through the process of what you've said in your brief, and when we look at the testimony of Ms. Mitchell, that's essentially what she's saying. When I get a document in the clerk's office, and if it's an it's a lien affidavit, which is provided for in the mechanics materialman's lien portion of the law, and you don't look behind the facts of what's stated in the affidavit. If you're the clerk, what you do is you look and see if it's properly notarized, and if it otherwise would not reflect on its face that it's fraudulent, and then you just simply file it. And then what happens after that's up to the lawyers that are involved in trying to take any action about that document. And the statute is clear in saying that a person commits an offense if and with intent to defraud or harm any person, he by deception causes another to sign or execute any document. Now, sign or execute the document, isn't that referring to the signing of the affidavit or the execution of the affidavit? Signing meaning placing upon it a signature or a notarization or other kind of physically manipulation of the paper, that is the mechanics lien affidavit. And I'm just wondering how we get to the proposition that what is happening is that that document's being filed by the clerk and it's not being signed or executed by the clerk.
Did you say the clerk signed something a few minutes ago?
Yes. On State's Exhibit 1 and 2, the first page has a certification of the bottom by Cynthia Mitchell. It was actually a deputy clerk, not actually Cynthia Mitchell, but I assume they have a stamp or some sort of electronic signature that they affix to everything that's filed.
A Michelle Bootwell, deputy clerk? That's a certified, a true and correct copy of the record on file in my office dated December 19, 2012.
Are you looking
what at? I don't know. I'm looking at
I guess the first page of State's Exhibit 1 and the first page of State's Exhibit 2 has, as Justice Meyer was speaking of, a document number, receipt number, what date was recorded, and at the bottom it says there's a certification by Cynthia Mitchell and her stamp. And as you were saying, Justice Meyer, the defendants might, the appellants might also be guilty of 3246A1 with the notary that they had sign on their lien. But I think in addition, when they had the clerk sign off and it's not a valid lien, they deceived that clerk because the clerk assumes that everything is valid and they file everything. And here we don't have, here it was filed by deception and it was signed and executed when it was given a court number, it was given a docket number, it was signed by Cynthia Mitchell, it was put into Denton County records.
But she doesn't make, the clerk doesn't make a decision within, it's not within her discretion to determine whether a document is valid and then decide whether she's going to file it or not, is it?
Well, as one of you spoke of, they get it and they stamp it and they file it. Uh-huh. But I think even if that's what they do, you're still deceiving them by filing something that's fraudulent. You're having them sign and execute something that's harming, in this case, Ms. Hall, Ms. Payne, Ms. Hall.
But you keep using the word execute, but I don't understand what it is she does that she constitutes executing.
Well,
filing, yes, recording, yes,
well,
but not executing.
In the Black Law's Dictionary of Execute, it's to make a legal document valid by signing, to bring a legal document into its final legally enforceable form. And as I said, in order to give notice and for future purchasers of the property to have proper notice before they buy the property, a notice of this lien has to be filed. So this notice of this lien is a legal document that's recorded with the county. And mm-hmm. by having when the clerk files that, she's signing it, she's giving it the document number, she's putting in Denton County records, she's signing and executing that document.
You're saying executing again, but I don't see where execution comes into the picture. She's signing it, she's filing it.
And I don't see anywhere in any government code where the clerk has any authority to execute documents as part of her job.
Well, the state's arguing that the execution is the filing of this document. When they stamp the name and when they put it into records, it's a Denton County record, and they have executed that document because that document is now legally enforceable. Now it's giving notice to future purchasers of this lien.
Well, that would make the clerk a party to the fraud, wouldn't it? If she's participating in executing it?
Well, and that's where in 3246A1, they are deceiving someone else into doing this because she is just filing it. As we spoke of, she is signing it, she is executing, she is filing it, and she isn't looking into whether it's fraudulent or not. So that's why, in this case, it falls back on the appellants.
So if they decided to give notice by posting it in the newspaper, would your indictment say that they had that the complainant was the newspaper employee who accepted the notice in the advertising department, or the?
Well, in this case, it's forcing someone to sign or execute a document that affects property. Putting an ad in a paper, wouldn't it be signing or executing in any way? It's not filed with the county records, and that brings up how the appellant is arguing that 3246, it should be filed under 3249. And in that case, if they put it in the paper, they could never be prosecuted under 3246A1.
Well, you're saying they can't be prosecuted under the one you prosecuted them under either.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
You're saying there wouldn't be anything executed at the newspaper, so couldn't prosecute them that way either under your statute.
Are you saying, hypothetically, if they
hypothetically, that's what you just said to me.
I guess what I was saying is that, say in this case, they hadn't taken it to the county clerk and they put it in the newspaper, we would have no 3246. But if later on Ms. Hall asked for requested a release of the lien, it could be under 3249.
Okay.
In this case, we only have 3246 and no 3249 because there's no evidence of any release of the lien.
Another question. you're not saying they did no work. You're just disagreeing with the amount of the lien. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Appellant's arguing that they didn't do any work, so the evidence is insufficient. The state is arguing that in the indictment, appellant misrepresented what that they did work that they actually did not do. For instance, I laid out in the state's brief, there's a chart for Aaron and a chart for Roger with all the things they claim they do and the evidence they didn't do it. Now, there is some evidence. For instance, Roger claims he did complete electrical. There is evidence that he put up a light fixture. The state is arguing that that is fraudulent because you didn't do complete electrical, you put up one light fixture. They claim they did all doors and windows. Curtis Payne testified that he did help hang one door. We're saying that you're misrepresenting that you did all windows and doors because you helped hang one door. Moving on to the in para materia argument, 3246A1 and 3249 are separate statute criminalizing different things. 3246A1 is criminalizing the act of deceiving another into signing or executing a document, and it's complete when that document is executed. 3249 is criminalizing refusing to release a lien, and it is completed when they make that refusal. In this case, we have, I'm sorry, I see that my time has run out.
Finish your sentence.
In this case, we have no evidence of 3249. There's no evidence that there was a request for refusal, that that request was received, or there was any refusal. So if there are no more questions, I'll briefly conclude.
Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Tomlin. I appreciate you answering all of our questions.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Vetta, do you have rebuttal?
Unless you have any additional questions, I'll waive my rebuttal time for the court.
Oh, wait, I have a question.
You're not getting off that easy.
In terms of the affidavit approach to what the clerk did, and I'm not talking about theory, in this case, the clerk was presented a document that says, here's an affidavit that I'm saying I did this work and I'll have a lien that's created by law, irrespective of what I've done here with this piece of paper. I've got a legal claim that I am giving notice to the public on, and I'm asking you to file this document so the public knows about it. Now, that's the normal, accepted, what always happens, or what most of the time happens when you got a mechanic's lien affidavit filed a record. Now, the legal aspects of whether it is a fraudulent document or whether it is filed with the intent to or commits an offense if with intent to defraud or harm any person causes another to sign or execute any document, all that comes out in the other phase of what's the effect of a notice, which is to try to enforce what rights or what opportunities are given in the law to try to collect the dollar amount that's specified in the file document. So I wonder if the whole concept of what is the intent to defraud or what is the harm that might be caused is tied back to the underlying transaction between the parties in such a way that we're really dealing with a civil issue involving who's right and who's wrong about trying to collect money.
You know, I think that's exactly our position in this appeal. That is, when one executes a lien, when you think about executing the document, you have a contractor build a room out of your house and you sign it. You've executed a document that gives right to proceeds from the sale of the property if you're not paid. You enforce your lien by suing for breach of contract. Okay. The district clerk has no role, as Justice Stefano stated. District clerk has no role whatsoever in that process. That process not only was taken care of in civil court, okay, so it was already taken care of before this proceeding even began. This statute simply cannot be reasonably construed to give the district court a role district clerk, excuse me, a role in enforcing a lien. It doesn't make sense. You need someone to be signing or executing something, and even using the definition that State Council provided, in order to put it into its final enforceable effect, you put a lien into its final enforceable effect when you sue someone, whether the subsequent purchaser who received constructive notice or the person you originally had the agreement with. But there's nothing, by taking a document to the county clerk's office doesn't make it enforceable effect. It's not enforceable until you win a lawsuit against the party from whom you're trying to collect money.
So then are they violating the offense if they filed a lawsuit to collect the money?
Hypothetically, if my clients had sued Ms. Payne claiming you owe me money, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, if we go down that slippery slope, then every time somebody files a lawsuit that turns out to be without merit, they've committed fraud by tricking the clerk who filed the lawsuit into filing the lawsuit.
Well, I mean, and again, Your Honor, to interpret 32.46 in a manner that would allow the execute to be construed that way would have overreaching ramifications, just as you noted. I mean, as it turns out, in every civil lawsuit, one person's saying, you owe me money, and the other one's saying, no, I don't. If every single time that value is over $20,000 and the plaintiff didn't prevail, we had a third-degree felony that could be brought in the district courts. I mean, there's a long canon of statutory interpretation where we don't give an interpretation that would produce an absurd result. I mean, every breach of contract case becomes a third-degree felony now? That simply can't be the case. Executing a document is in this context of 3246, is getting a judicial officer or a constable or a sheriff to seize someone's property. That's executing the writ of execution or domesticating a fraudulent judgment. That's what this particular statute must have been designed to do, because any, especially when read in the context of the legislative history, any other interpretation has these basically cataclysmic consequences for, you know, even just the remotest civil dispute as to what a document meant or what it didn't mean. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Thank you for your presentation, counsel. Thank you both for your briefing and your answering of the questions and your presentation this afternoon. Your case is submitted, and it'll be determined, and you'll hear from the court.